What is going on, everyone? It is College Football Talk, and I am your host, Hunter DeLauder, and today is Week 14 preview. It is Rivalry Week. We have finally made it to the end of the regular season. It's hard to believe we're already here to this point. Season's blown by. I mean, I just remember it being, you know, fall camp. We were getting ready for Week 1, all the highly anticipated matchups of Week 1 and Labor Day weekend and all that. And now, in a blink of an eye, we are in the later stages of November. We got Thanksgiving weekend coming up. Thanksgiving is today as I'm recording this, and we're already in rivalry. Time has flown by, but we have enjoyed every second of it, and we still have a lot to go. I mean, we haven't even got into conference championships, bowl season, playoffs, so we have a lot to still play for, and we have a big weekend at hand here. There could be another chaotic Saturday in the making. Just saying, there was a lot of games in here that it could go a lot either way, and I'm here for all of it. So without further ado, though, we're going to get right into it, though. But make sure you guys are subscribing to the podcast. We're trying to get to 200 subscribers. Remember, only way we can do that is if you guys are subscribing to the pod, liking, sharing the videos on YouTube, and then hitting that Spotify, or if you're on Spotify or Amazon Music, following and listening on there as well. Without further ado, though, we're going to get right into it because we have a lot to talk about. We're going to start with the playoff rankings that dropped on Tuesday night, later than I needed it to be, as I was trying to get somewhere. Had to wait, though, to the playoff rankings, but basketball got in the way. But nonetheless, we got the playoff rankings. Here they are. We have number one, Oregon, two, Ohio State, three, Texas, Penn State at four. We have Notre Dame 5, Miami 6, Georgia 7, Tennessee 8, SMU 9, Indiana 10, Boise State 11, Clemson 12, Alabama 13, Ole Miss 14, South Carolina 15, Arizona State 16, Tulane 17, Iowa State 18, BYU 19, Texas A&M 20, Missouri 21, UNLV 22, Illinois 23, Kansas State 24, excuse me, and then Colorado rounding out the top 25 at 25. So what do we make of all this? Well, here's what I make out of it. First and foremost, things to keep an eye on, in my opinion, this is how I kind of view things. That 12 through 17 spot is really what I'm looking at for this week. A is one of the main things, mainly because you have, Clemson, Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina, all, trying to kind of jockey either way into position to where if a team in front of them falls, they're right there to kind of jump back into this thing. They're going to need a team like Miami probably to lose, Notre Dame to lose, Indiana, SMU, Tennessee, Georgia. Georgia, though, can control their own destiny still because they go to the conference title game. So really, it's Tennessee, Miami, Notre Dame, SMU, Indiana, Boise State. Boise State's in at 11 right now, so keep an eye on that because Boise State as the 11 spot, right now they would be the 5 seed because they'd be the 4th highest conference champion. But at 11, they're already an auto bid. So there's somebody to keep an eye on right there. Arizona State at 16 puts them as the 12th seed. Here, if you want, here we will shift over to this. Here we go. So this is the bracket right now. So Alabama and Clemson would be the first two teams out. Arizona State would hop both of them, obviously, because they would be the next highest conference champion. But there's something to keep an eye on. So 16 is Arizona State. Tulane is sitting there at 17. Now, what's interesting about that is, so you have Tulane. They play Memphis on Thanksgiving night, a big game, trying to finish the AAC conference play undefeated, go to 10-2 on the regular season before taking on Army next week in the conference title game. If they win out, and let's just say Arizona State loses, or something wild, Arizona State, they go to the Big 12 title game, they make it. But what? Let's just say, though, we have a 3-loss Big 12 team. How about that? Instead of, just singling out Arizona State. Let's just say we have a 3-loss Big 12 team. You will have, and Tulane is 2 losses, conference champion. There's a world out there where you could have a Tulane team from the American hopping over the Big 12 and we don't see a Big 12 team in it. Keep that in mind, because again, it's not the five, it's just the five highest ranked conference champions. There's no sort of specific champions. It just has to be the five highest conference ranked. It doesn't matter from where, it just has to be five highest ranked. So that could be, if that has to be in this case, the American, the Mountain West, the Big Ten, ACC, and SEC, that's how it is. That's why I think it's important if Arizona State needs to win out, because I think they're really the Big 12's last hope, because every other team has more than two losses. Arizona State is the Big 12's, I think, final hope of getting in. Otherwise, I think Tulane, they're going to need Tulane to lose, because I think if Army wins out and wins, I think the Big 12 would be fine. But Tulane right there is just, it's like that meme where it's like the objects appear closer than they seem. That's what it is right now. So Arizona State better win out, I think, because if Tulane wins out, they will push them to the brink. And as soon as, I mean, we talk about teams 12 through 15, I mean, Tulane right there can just hop over and there you go. You talk about a wild, wild case right there. I mean, nobody would see that coming. No. I mean, if you knew that was going to be the case, I need you to go play the lottery for me. So, something else to keep in mind, Indiana sitting right there at 10. I think that means though that they're squarely in this thing. To me, it looks like that the committee, Ward Manuel saying how, you know, they played Ohio State tough and that their strength of schedule is fine and stuff is good. I don't know what the hell he's watching. Ohio State could have put 50 on Indiana if they wanted to. They stalled a few times in the red zone. And Indiana's strength of schedule is terrible. So both of them don't add up. But nonetheless, they sit there at 10, and unless they lose to Purdue, they're going to be going to the playoff. What happens after that is to be determined. I still think this is a team that if they get matched up really with anybody else, I think they're not sitting pretty at all. I think they would not match up anywhere good. Right now they would be playing Penn State. I mean, maybe if you can single out the run, I mean, they're number one in the country in stopping the run. So if you can maybe force Drew Aller beat you with his arm, maybe you get him, because if you could take away Tyler Warren, and maybe it wouldn't be the worst matchup, but I would still lean Penn State in that one. Boise State right there at 11. We already talked about them as an auto bid. I think the teams right now that have a chance to lock up their spot in this thing this week with wins would be Tennessee, Georgia, Penn State, Notre Dame, and Miami for sure. I think if Miami wins out, I think even if they would – I think if they beat Syracuse and that if they lose to SMU, I still think that they're in. It would be an interesting debate and see where they fall. They'd be a 10-2 team with a loss in the ACC title game. But then how much are you penalizing a team for losing in their conference championship? Because that would be the same debate you would have maybe with the Georgia team, that let's say they go 10-3 and they lose to Texas. Who they beat already. So I think that would be fine. I think regardless, if Georgia wins Friday, I think they're going to be in. But like Tennessee, they can lock up their spot. I mean, none of these teams are really challengeable, except Tennessee. Tennessee has to go to Vanderbilt, which could be a challenge for them, especially if with how inconsistent Tennessee's been offensively. It could be a bit of a challenge for sure. But other than the other teams, like, I mean, Penn State, they play Maryland. I don't see anything there. Notre Dame is a sneaky one to keep an eye on, though, because they go to USC after playing in New York City last week. They got to go cross country and play a feisty USC team that's played a lot better defense as of late last few weeks. They're still trying to figure things out, the new quarterback of Maiava in this offense, but they're a very physical group. And I still think that, you know, they could very challenge Notre Dame for sure. Maybe 1 second here is my... And that'll work. My headphones died, so you know, we're just gonna freeball it right now. That's how it's been right now. I charge my headphones and then they die. That it is what it is right there. So hopefully if you can hear me, perfect. But, you know, bracket right now, you'd have two conference games, which I'm not really a big fan of. I don't know if the committee would end up even doing that. It'd be interesting to see if they would, especially if it's more than one. Maybe one, you know, you just, that's just how the kind of the cookie crumbles. But you have more than one like this right here. I think especially one of them being a rematch in the same venue it already was a couple weeks ago, I think the committee would not, you know, I think they would shake it up. And again, the fifth seed, final point here, I think the fifth seed proves to still be the best spot to be in. I mean, look at Ohio State right now. Ohio State would play Arizona State. I think according to FanDuel, they'd be a 21-point favorite. And then let's just say they beat Arizona State. They would then go play at a neutral site against Boise State, where we can all agree that Ohio State probably wins both those games. And all at, in retrospect, that way, I mean, so realistically, they may not even get challenged until the semifinals. But then you take a team like Oregon, who has to sit there at the one seed, and they get either Tennessee or Georgia, two very physical teams, two very, you know, capable teams of making runs in this thing. And you're sitting there as the one seed, kind of getting penalized. You're an undefeated conference champion at the one spot, but you're the one getting the tougher draw to a team that you did, in theory, beat twice, and they get a better draw in retrospect. That's why I'm curious to see how this auto bid thing plays out, because if a team like that kind of gets screwed, I doubt the same format lasts. I mean, I'm fine, you know, taking the conference champions, but I want to get rid of the auto bids. I would rather, or the first round buys. The auto bids maybe you can work around with, but the first round buy part, I would rather just, you know, plug them all in the first round at some point. Do something like that, because you're kind of penalizing that, you know, Oregon right there, instead of, you know, having them have the easier schedule. That'd be like, you know, taking the one seed in the NCAA tournament and putting them down to like where like the 7-8 team draw is. You know what I mean? Having them go through that path instead of playing the 16th seed, the 8-9 game, and then going on from there. You know, so little things like that can add up quickly, and this is one of them. But, you know, again, we take this for a grain of salt. I think a lot of this is still going to be, there's still going to be a lot of changing going on, a lot of movement going to be happening, and I expect more than one upset to be happening before we get, you know, to the ultimate playoff in 2 weeks from now. So, like, the Tennessee-Georgia isn't going to stay where it is. You know, that's obviously going to update. You know, some of this stuff's just going to update itself, and, as far as who's going to get in, I still couldn't tell you. So, again, if you know, please let me know so I can take it to Hard Rock Bet to sprinkle a few bucks down. All right, we're going to be getting in now to our let me get a drink, and we are going to be getting right into our preview time. We're going to dive right in. We're going to start with two of the bigger Friday games, and then we're going to hop into the Saturday slate. We're going to start with the Egg Bowl. Mississippi State is at number 14, Ole Miss. Currently, Ole Miss is a 26-point favorite. Ole Miss, or the over-under, excuse me, 61.5. Ole Miss leads the series 56-30-4. In the last 10 meetings, the Rebels have a 6-4 win-loss advantage. So, with a spread like this being this big, instead of, you know, going through both teams, you know, obviously we're going to do a little bit of both teams, but it's mostly going to be, how can Mississippi State even compete or even win this game? And I think it all starts with having a fast start, especially against a team like Ole Miss, where, you know, you're coming off the terrible loss at Florida, where, you know, you kind of let that one slip away from you with the missed opportunities in the red zone, just the turnovers late. It just kind of all got away from you right there. And it, you know, it puts you now really behind the eight ball. You're not out of it yet, but you know, you really hurt yourself a lot there. So where are they at mentally? I think if, especially if Mississippi State can go to Oxford and maybe get out in front of them early with maybe a deep play, they have been having relatively good success, you know, last month and a half or so with the deep shots. So if they can maybe hit a deep shot and then score a touchdown, they kind of just set the tone early. That may be like kind of like a mini gut punch to Ole Miss, because you're already trying to recuperate, get ready for this game after what happened last week and everything else going on with your season outlook and everything. So if you can come out early and just punch them in the mouth, That's big. I already talked about the explosive plays here. Like kind of mentioned it, attacking this secondary. Ole Miss's secondary is one of the more bottom tier ones in the SEC and in the FBS. They're 76 in passing yards allowed. They're giving up almost 225 a game. And Mississippi State is middle of the pack-ish with about 235 a game. So, they've been able to have success against relatively quality opponents in Georgia. They had some success against Texas A&M, some deep plays with Tennessee. Like, these are relatively decent defenses that they're having success against. It may not be super consistent, but they are having some success. And again, if you can hold up enough up front, it's going to be very challenging with these game records up front with, Sitaria Perkins, Jared Ivey, Walter Nolan, who had himself a day last week. Princely Umen Yellen. Like, if you can hold up even just enough, give your quarterback a chance, Michael Van Buren. Give him a chance to get the ball down the field. Give it to your guys like Kevin Coleman Jr. and Mario Craver. So, Van Buren's has taken over, though. He's been relatively pretty good. I mean, almost 55% completion percentage, 1,600 yards, averaging almost just over 7 yards a carry or a pass, 10 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Can the pass pro hold up, though? That's where I'm worried about, because Mississippi State's been really, really bad at giving up sacks. They give up a bunch to Tennessee. Georgia got after it a couple times. I mean, they're 121st in sacks allowed, giving up almost 3 a game, and Ole Miss is first in the nation. They got Lagway down 3 times last week, and if it wasn't for Lagway's athleticism and just raw talent and such like that, and just him being just built a little bit different, they might have probably had about 6 sacks Saturday, I'd say. That would be right on cue. I mean, Ole Miss averaging 4 a game. They have 49 on the season, which I got to start looking at like all-time records-wise. Because, they have to be creeping up there. Maybe they're not. Let me see. Most sacks in a single season. That would be most team sacks, right? Most team sacks in a season CFB. All right, let's see. That's the Chicago Bears. I need college record. That's player. See, these are all players, and so I'm going to have to look at that. I'm going to come back to you on that one. We'll come back to that one next week when if I remember. But back to the preview. Mississippi State, I think, needs to get pressure on Jackson Dart. This is going to be a big thing. So in the 3 losses Ole Miss has this season, their offensive line has struggled. They've given up 14 sacks combined in those 3 losses. So what does that mean? It means you got to get pressure on Dart, and you have to contain him in a sense. Maybe putting a spy, because his legs will eat you alive. If you give him any opportunity to scramble out of it, create something for himself, he's going to take advantage of that, and he's going to beat you or burn you in extend drives later on and possibly score points off of it. So containing him and getting home is going to be very big. Creating negative plays, making the game sloppy is something they're going to have to do. Typically, these games like this, they do end up being kind of sloppy. Even like last year, Ole Miss was projected, or I believe they were, a relatively big point spread last year, and they it was a slop fest for 4 quarters, and it was like a 17-7 game, I think. So if Mississippi State can do that, get it to the 4th quarter, then anything happens. If you're Ole Miss, though, I think, Trey Harris being banged up some. I haven't looked at the injury report to see what's up with that. I don't know if they dropped yet. But he went out against Florida after being banged up already previously this season. So if he's out again, who's going to be that guy to step up? You have Prescorn, you have Caden Lee, you have Jordan Watkins. Who's going to be that guy? Who can be that wide receiver one to step up? Because last week, down the stretch of that game, the wide receiver play really went downhill, and it cost Ole Miss some. There was a touchdown dropped. There was a couple other missed routes, just some miscommunication that I think that just happens when you're trying to press, when you don't have your main guy. That kind of stuff can happen. So if Ole Miss can do that, I think they're going to have a relatively easy, good chance of winning this game. Easy, maybe, but rivalry games, you never know. As far as prediction goes, I do like Ole Miss to win this one, 38-17. I do like the under in this game. I think that that number is a really big number. Because, again, I think either Ole Miss is A, going to blow them out. Kind of this isn't like a theory on Florida State, but like if Ole Miss, I think either A, Ole Miss is going to blow them out, and you're looking at like a 45-10 game, or it's going to be a relatively like a slop fest. I just don't see how Mississippi State's going to be able to keep up point wise with those pass rushers up front, and really Mississippi State's just inability to really have an identity offensively, except for like maybe hitting the deep shots. Other than that, I really just don't see how they're going to be able to contend in this one. And it being in Oxford, just it doesn't spell a good recipe for success. So that's why I like Ole Miss, and I do like the under in this one. All right, moving on to Georgia Tech at number seven, Georgia. The Dogs come in as a 19.5-point favorite, over-under sitting at 53.5. This is clean old-fashioned hate, as a lot of the people like to call it. The Dogs lead the series 71-39-5. Georgia has won the last six. Kirby Smart is 7-1 against the Yellow Jackets. And this game being in Athens at Sanford Stadium, Georgia has sitting on a 30-game winning streak at home. Their last loss came at the hands of South Carolina in 2019. So, can Georgia Tech win this game? Well, if they want to do that, they're going to probably need to do these things. First thing, get the run game going early. I think that early and often, especially with how Georgia has struggled at times this year tackling in space, eye discipline's been an issue sometimes, second-level tackling by the linebackers and secondary guys. Last week, they gave up 226 yards to UMass. That can't happen in this game if you're Georgia. You've got to be able to wrap up. Wrapping up has been an issue. Just getting guys to the ground, it looks like there's been a couple times this year where George's had a guy, swallowed up in the line, and then he's been able to get out of it and just bounce out and get extra yards. That can't happen. George's got to be able to wrap up. They've got to be able to tackle, and they can't. Georgia Tech, which likes to run the football a lot, is going to be able to have some success. It starts with, Jamal Haynes is going to have to have a good night. And then I think Aaron Filo is going to be the key in this game. He started coming in more after Haynes King suffered that shoulder injury, throwing the football more. But his legs have been very, very productive for Georgia Tech. They've been seen as a weapon. He had the go-ahead. He had the go-ahead touchdown last week against NC State that gave him the win. I was watching the highlight of that game and a little bit of the Miami game, but like his legs, they're not someone to meet, beat around the bush with. Like that's someone you've got to be able to, take an account, especially Haynes King. Haynes King's probably going to start this game, but they'll switch back and forth. Haynes King's going to be more the running type guy, and Filo's going to be more like the downfield type thrower. And he's not bad throwing the football either. Like some of the deep shots he's hit, like those are some pretty good throw footballs. So George's got to be able to play, be ready for the two quarterback system. And be ready to tackle quarterback run, halfback counters, and these quarterback design runs have got to be at the top of the list if you're Georgia. And if you're Georgia Tech, take advantage of that. You've seen this year Georgia has struggled at times dealing with this. So if you can get it going early and establishing 5, 6, 7 yards carry, that's big. It's going to keep you in the game. It's going to slow the game down. UMass last week, UMass ate up almost 12 minutes worth of clock in the first half, in the first quarter. Georgia had one drive in the first quarter. That's what Georgia Tech's going to have to do, slow the game down, establish the run, and go on these long, sustaining drives, it'll put more pressure on Georgia's offense to do something, because especially if they're giving up points on the defensive side, it's going to put pressure on Georgia's offense to have to put more points back up on the board, because if they're not, then you're giving the ball right back, so they're going to do the same thing over again. Less opportunities to score, plays more into the hands of Georgia Tech. We talk about hitting the deep ball, using his legs. That's Aaron Filo. Especially against, the secondary for Georgia's been a little shaky here and there. They've been better as of late, but again, establishing the run's going to be able to hit, make those deep shots a little bit easier, because you're going to get more guys playing down the field instead of, you know, playing back, play action is going to be there. Forcing turnovers has got to be another thing, making the game sloppy, especially again, same thing in the Mississippi State game. A point spread this big means you've got to be able to make this game a slop fest. Get it dirty, force turnovers. Carson Beck does have the 12 interceptions on the season. Now, last two games, he's played pretty good football, hasn't turned the ball over. That doesn't mean like he's not susceptible to still throwing interceptions, because he is, but he's been better with the football. But if Georgia Tech, you created a bunch of turnovers last week, you got a couple against Miami in the big upset win. You got to be able to now bring it on the road, a hostile crowd, and, you know, force Carson Beck to make some poor decisions. And if he does, you got to be able to capitalize on it. If you're Georgia in this game, you know, with Philo, and I was talking about him probably getting most of the majority of the snaps, the meaningful stuff, that's how it's been the last few weeks for Tech. You got to keep in mind, though, he's still a freshman. And I don't think he hasn't been in an environment like he's about to step in on Saturday or Friday night. And so as a crowd and as a defense, you've got to be able to put pressure on him. Crowd-wise, make it as loud as possible when they're out there, you know, make him, you know, just overwhelm him. And then if you're the defense, you've got to be able to put pressure on him, contain the quarterback, have a spy. Someone's got to have to be a spy, whether it be Allen or Wilson, Jalen Walker. Somebody's got to have to be that spy to keep him at bay. Or if he tries to escape, you're right there. Contain on the edge guys by Williams, Walker, Chaz Chambliss, you know, trying to think, Tyron Ingram, Dawkins. Like, these guys are going to have to be able to swarm. Georgia is decent at getting after the quarterback. They're getting about 2 sacks a game. But, I mean, Georgia Tech's been really good at, you know, not giving up sacks. They're second in the country in sacks allowed. They're giving up less than 1 per game. They've only given up 5 on the year. It's only behind Army for fewest in the nation. So that's going to be a big test. Now, it was similar stuff going into the Texas game, if we're going to be fair about it. And Georgia was able to wreak havoc all night long. So if Georgia can get home, that's going to be huge. But again, it starts with stopping the run. Stopping the run is going to be huge, because I think if you can stop the run, you take away their best trait, you force a freshman quarterback on the road in the most hostile crowd he's been in all year to beat you with his arm, I'd say have at it. Because teams that have beaten Georgia have had elite quarterback play. This year alone, Jalen Milroe, I'd say he had a pretty good day. Jackson Dart had a really nice day. Is Aaron Philo or Haynes King those guys? I don't think so. So, again, putting pressure and, you know, just wreaking havoc and stopping the run is going to be huge. Carson Beck's legs are going to be an X factor in this game. Now, I don't know if not enough people are thinking about that, but if you watch Georgia Tech this year, you know, they've been a pretty good run-stopping unit, but what's hurt them has been the quarterback runs, the off-script plays, even some design stuff. NC State last week torched them doing this. Riley Leonard had success doing this. Cam Ward had some success doing this. Trying to think who else. Kyle McCord had some. Like, they've had issues with stopping quarterback runs. And Carson Beck's legs was a huge reason why they won the Tennessee game. He's not going to be the most mobile guy in the world, but if he needs to use his legs, he will, especially with how banged up they've been in the running back room. Like, there will be some design stuff. There will be hit moments where he's going to be able to take off and get those extra yards. And if they're there, he's going to be able to take advantage of it. Georgia Tech secondary versus Georgia pass game is going to be, I think, one of the more bigger stories in this game. Georgia Tech is 68th in passing yards allowed, but against top 15 pass units, they have struggled mightily this year. Against Louisville, 15th, 269 yards. Syracuse is second in the nation, 381 yards they allowed. Miami, third in the nation. Georgia Tech allowed 348 yards through the air. Georgia is ranked 9th in the nation in pass offense, thrown about for just under 300 yards a game. Last year, it was the ground game that was a difference maker with Kendall Milton and Deshaun Edwards. This year, it will be the pass game. And how Georgia Tech plays the pass game will decide if they're still in this game by the fourth quarter. Because if Beck's able to do whatever he wants, and just even if it starts with the soft stuff underneath, getting yards after catch with the tight ends, with Arian Smith, Dom Lovick, like, this will be a very clear sign early, I think, in this game. You know, don't think about it right now, but UMass, regardless of who they play and stuff, is 11th best in pass defense in the nation. And Georgia had no issues with that. Now, obviously, UMass takes that for a grain of salt, but still. I mean, they've played much better offenses, too, in this that top 30 spot, and Georgia's had no issues with it. So, I mean, the turnovers have been there, but, like, the pass yardage has been high, and they've had success scoring. So, I mean, if Georgia Tech wants to stay in this game, they're going to have to really be able to realistically run the football, and you got to be able to limit the pass game. So, will that happen? I don't know. As far as prediction goes, though, I like the Dogs doing this one 37-21. I just think that Georgia has too much firepower. I just don't think Georgia Tech has played a team that's been as balanced on both sides of the football as Georgia has this year. Miami's probably next up, but Miami's defense is so terrible that, you know, there's a reason why Cam Ward has to play hero ball every week. You might say it could be a look ahead spot, but I think in-state rivalry, you need this game to afford yourself some sort of leeway in the event that you lose next week in the SEC title game. So you need to win this game. Because if you lose this game and then you lose again the next week, I don't see how they make the playoff. They have to win this game to be finished the year 10-2, go into the playoff, or they go to the conference title game. So then win or lose, you know, you're either playing for a bye in the first round, or you're playing for, you know, maybe a home game as one of the, maybe the seventh or eighth seed. So I think Kirby Smart will have this team ready to roll. Sorry, Tech. Just, you're not going to be able to go. You're not going into the Sanford on Friday night, last game of the year in Athens. That crowd's going to be juiced up and ready to roll on Black Friday, and Dogs are going to get a big one. All right, moving on now to who Georgia will either be facing, one of the two teams in the SEC title game. Number 3, Texas, is at number 20, Texas A&M. Longhorns come in as a 5.5-point favorite, over-under sitting at 48.5. This is the first time these two teams have played since 2011. Texas won that game in a walk-off field goal. Justin Tucker hit that kick. I don't know if a lot of you know who that is. He's done pretty well for himself in the NFL. And listen, there's a lot at stake in this game. And I'm glad that there is, for how long that this game hasn't been played, for it to finally be back, Texas to be in the SEC, and now it's finally here, Saturday. And the implications for it are sky high. Winner of this goes to the SEC title game. Texas really has to win this game, I think, to give themselves a shot to make the playoff, because, again, their resume just doesn't back up their best. The most difficult game they've played this year was Georgia, and they lost by 15-0. You could say what you want about the turnovers and such, but you still lost by double digits at home. And so your best win is a Vanderbilt team who, if they lose Saturday, will be 6-6. So you can't lose this game. And if you're Texas A&M, well, you're fighting for your playoff life on Saturday. You lose this, you're going to a bowl game, but you're not going to the playoffs. You have to win out if you want to go to the playoffs. So everything's there for the taking for both teams, but which team's going to show up? That's going to be the question here. For Texas A&M, they're going to need a guy after the quarterback. Nick Scorton, Shamar Stewart. Quinn Ewers' mobility is not really ever there, and he had an MRI done this week on his ankle. So how mobile is he going to be, even if he is, you know, 100%? I don't know. This could be a game like Georgia had against Texas early on in this year where – you know, you have some expectations about if Texas is going to be, thinking Texas is going to be able to hold up, and then they just don't. And I think that, you know, this defensive line has to show up and show out. It's underperformed to the preseason, you know, standard that was set. And for the most part, this season, it just hasn't lived up to the hype. There's been a couple of games that they've done well, but for the most part of the season, it's been very up and down. They've got to have their best game of the season this year. this game, they've got to be able to get after the quarterback and just make life miserable for Quinn Ewers. Marshall Reed cannot turn the football over offensively. He's done a pretty good job assuming the role as QB1 for A&M, but you know, they can't turn the football over. Texas is one of the best teams at creating turnovers. They're second in the nation in passes intercepted, second in pass defense as a group. So, you know, you have guys like Muhammad, Makumba, like they're going to be able to create turnovers. They just do. How many do they get, if any? I mean, if you're A&M, like you got to be able to realize like this defense is really good. We cannot be giving them free gifts, especially the offense that is just as good at putting up points as anybody. Can't be giving up free field position and, you know, turnovers. And I think Amari Daniels, running back, has to have a big game. You know, kind of assuming the role as RB1 since Le'Veon Moss has been out. He's been all right, averaging just over 5 yards carry, 8 touchdowns. He's going to have a big game, especially with how good that pass defense is for Texas. Being balanced is going to be huge in this game for Texas A&M. Like, establishing some sort of run game, being balanced enough, whether it be through Marcel Reed's legs, which has to be another big factor in this one, and Amari Daniels, like, they got to be able to make enough, you know, progress on the ground to be able to take some stress off of, you know, Reed throwing the football and making things, you know, less predictable for Texas. And I think the 12th man's got to have the biggest impact of the season. The LSU game was unreal. How the environment, how charged up and juiced up and ready to roll that crowd was from pregame to the last play of the game in the fourth quarter. Like, that was unreal. That they've got to now take it up to another level. Can they do that? Because they've got to be able to play a huge factor in this one and how Texas operates from each play to play. If you're Texas, I think, you know, attacking A&M down the field is going to be huge, but that starts with protecting Quinn Ewers. You know, dealing with those big boys up front is going to be the first part, but if you can hold up enough, I think you're going to have windows of opportunity to take advantage of an A&M secondary that got scorched or torched by Auburn. They got beat up pretty well by LSU, even though they won. South Carolina got them really bad. I mean, this is a team that is very susceptible. Explosive passes allowed this year, A&M. 20-plus yards, they're 30. That's 31. That's tied for 48th. 30-plus yards, they've given up 19 plays. That's tied for 107th. 40-plus yards, 10 plays. That's tied for 110th. And then 50-plus yard plays, 7 on the year. That's tied for 123rd. So, I mean, they've been having an issue with this all season long. I mean, 50-plus yards. I mean, that can't be happening 7 times in a year. Just can't. Especially with, you know, again, how hyped up in preseason this defense was. See how lackluster it's been in the secondary? That hasn't been one of the more bright spots on this team this year. But again, they've got to be able to limit it, keeping everything in front, because if you let guys like Ryan Wingo, Matthew Golden, Isaiah Bond, Gunnar Helm get free and get running, they're going to get big chunk plays at will. And if you're Texas, I mean, offensively, though, we're talking about, you know, creating those explosive plays, but I mean, the offense has just seemed like it's been in neutral for the last month, where, like, you know, they're winning games. And, you know, the score would say, you know, another double-digit win for Texas. You know, like last week, it was 31-14 against Kentucky. But it's like, you know, the yardage and stuff is there. But, man, it could be a lot more. There's just a lot more for the taking. And it just hasn't clicked. And, again, it's kind of like the Georgia offense we've been waiting for all year. Up until really, like, the Tennessee game. Like, when they can put it all together, Texas, how good is it going to look? You know what I mean? Like, if they can just put it all together and Quinn Ewers has that Alabama-type game from last season, this team does, and they just put it all together and they go out there and they're just doing whatever they want all night long. That's a dangerous. That's the national title offense that I think a lot of people thought we were going to get for a full season with Texas. Can it be ready or just be there on Saturday? And then again, scoring early, I think, is going to help a lot with this one, but quieting the crowd. I think long possessions, running the football will quiet a crowd faster than anything, because it's nothing flashy, it's nothing special. But if you're able to run the ball and get 4 to 6 yards a carry, I mean, you're going to go on these long drives and you're going to take all the momentum, all the energy out of the stadium. And if you can do that consistently, repeat it, drive in and drive out, I mean, it's going to be a lot, less intimidating environment than if, you can't run the football at all. You're not having any luck pass protecting wise, and Quinn Ewers is getting smoked left and right, then you're just asking for an issue. As far as prediction goes, though, I've been saying it all year with some of these bigger SEC games, or just in games in general. When an underdog is at home, and you have a team like Texas, for this instance, coming in, and I just think that the crowd is like that. Obviously, the 12th man for Texas A&M, but like Neyland Stadium, Penn State, Baton Rouge, Georgia, or Dooley Field. These stadiums and these crowds play such a huge role in, being that 12th man, being that extra player or two on the field, it feels like. And I just think that they are a huge reason why some of these teams win these games that maybe they're not supposed to. Or if you played it on a neutral site, the results would be a lot different. And I just think that A&M has waited since 2011 to get revenge and avenge a loss that they thought was kind of just stolen. And just the game went right between their fingers. And they knew they should have won it, and they didn't. Now they've had to sit on it for over a decade and wait for their next moment to do it in the same field that they lost on so long ago. And I just think that this team is going to be so ready to roll. I think they were looking ahead last week. And, you get caught up with looking ahead, going to Jordan-Hare where that voodoo magic is. I just think that A&M's going to be – you're going to see a lot different A&M team on Saturday. You're going to see a more focused group. You're going to see a driven group, and you're going to see your team ready to go out there and kick some butt. And I just think I like Texas A&M to win this one. I think it's really close. 27-24 is my prediction. But I don't think you're going to see anything left off the table. I think all the chips are going to be in this one. Nothing's going to be left behind as far as saving it for another game in the playbook. Like, you've got to win this game to move on to the next stage in your season. So you can't afford to just hold anything back. You've got to be able to go out there and take care of business and win. And I think Texas A&M is going to be able to do that. All right. Whew. Inspirational stuff right there. Oh, make sure you guys are subscribing to the podcast. Remember, trying to get 200 subscribers. The only way we can do that is if you guys are hitting that subscribe button and helping boost the numbers. So it's free. Just hit that button and you're all good to go. All right. We're going to move it on to South Carolina.
Excuse me.
Man, it is a little late time we're recording this, but with the holiday and stuff, gotta get it out, guys. So, number 15, South Carolina, is at number 12, Clemson. Clemson is a 2.5-point favorite, over-under sitting at 49.5. It is the Palmetto Bowl. Both teams, as we talked about earlier today in the episode, racing towards the playoffs. Both teams still have a shot at making the playoffs as an auto or as an at-large. I mean, this is an elimination game. Which team wants it more? Really is what it's going to come down to. Both teams hate each other. Just go to Twitter if you don't know yet. Type in this game and you'll find a lot of fan base members from both sides that express their opinion rather upfront with you, just to say the least. But listen, winner this is going to keep their season alive. The loser is going to go and play in a nice bowl game before New Year's and call it a season. That's really what it comes down to. Clemson also needs to win this one to stay alive in the ACC title race. They're not out of it yet. They need Miami to lose this weekend and for Clemson to obviously win that, you know, have a shot at playing in Charlotte. But if you're Clemson, I think it's going to boil down to A, Cade Klubnik needing to show up in this one. He's played really well this season. He has over 2,700 passing yards, 63% completion percentage, 29 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. But in the big games this year, Louisville, Georgia, he just hasn't shown up. He has one touchdown and one interception between the two games combined. It just hasn't been enough. It has not been enough. It's far from enough. He only has 370 yards combined in those two. So he's doing well against the less inferior opponents. But when it comes to, you know, time to put on your big boy britches against Georgia, against Louisville at home, it hasn't been. It just has, and it's got to show up on Saturday because you're going up against a South Carolina unit that is outstanding at getting after the quarterback. And so you're going to be able to have to move around enough, create plays on your own that are going to be off scripted for sure. Can you do that? Can you just elevate your game knowing the implications of this game? Can you elevate it to another level to get your team to win? Running the football is going to be huge, especially with how well South Carolina is at getting after the quarterback. Phil Moffa is going to have a big game in this one. He's done really well this season. He's over 1,000 yards rushing. He's averaging almost 6 yards carry. He has 8 touchdowns. South Carolina is a top 15 unit in stopping the run. So it's going to be a tough one. It will probably be the toughest challenge to this point, maybe outside of the Georgia game. But I mean, because he went off against Louisville. So, you know, he had a tough one against Georgia. Can he bounce back and have a big game at home against South Carolina? He's going to have to, I think, because if they can't run the football, it might get out of hand quickly. I really do think the way that South Carolina offensively has been playing this last, you know, down the stretch here, with how well Lenora Sellers has been playing, how well they're just, you know, sinking and putting points up on the board. You get one dimensional against South Carolina, you're done. You are toasted. So they're going to have a good run game and forcing turnovers. South Carolina has not been good at protecting the football. They're 88th in turnovers lost this season, 17 on the year. They have fumbled the ball 11 times. I mean, you're looking at a pretty good linebacker room. Those edge guys with Woods. You have Wade Woodes, Peter. You know, we already talked about Peter Woods. So, you know, you have guys like that. Was it Barrett Carter's also in that line? I think that's the name. So you have guys that are there. They've got to be able to create turnovers in this one. If you're South Carolina, force Clemson to stop the run. Because, you know, between Lenore Sellers and Rocket Sanders, like, you have a 1-2 group, 1-2 combo at the quarterback and running back spot that is going to be able to put good numbers up on the ground. And Clemson's a middle-of-the-pack team in rush defense. And you have a guy like Rocket Sanders who has almost 900 yards on the year and 11 touchdowns. And you have Lenore Sellers who's put up almost 500 yards on the ground, not to mention how well he's done in throwing the football as of late. He has over 2,100 yards passing, 65% completion percentage. He has 17 touchdowns, 6 interceptions throwing the football. I mean, it's a middle-of-the-pack defense for Clemson. This is why I think it's so big that they're going to be able to have success offensively, because this may become a shootout if it has to be. I just think that between the pass rush being how high it is statistically, how well it's just shown up in big games outside of really the Ole Miss game, it's shown up. I like South Carolina in this game. I think the wrong team's favored in this one. I think the only reason why they're favored like that is because it's at home. But it being a noon kickoff, with how well South Carolina's been playing down the stretch compared to some of these other teams, I just think that once a team has really big momentum rolling, it's just so hard to stop it. And I just don't know if Clemson's going to be able to keep up for 4 quarters against a team like South Carolina, who has just, you know, again, they're at the ref job away from, you know, winning the LSU game. And they're a couple plays away from beating Alabama. I mean, this is a possible like one loss team right here we're looking at. So, you know, this has been a really good team all season long. And it's just they've had a couple bad breaks. So like some of these other SEC schools, but you know, I just think that the wrong team's favored. I like South Carolina to win this one. I think that that pass rush between it being, you know, Kyle Kennard, Dylan Stewart, Tonka Hemingway, Brian Thomas, like those four are going to create pressure. And I just don't know how well Clemson's going to be able to hold up offensively. I don't think that South Carolina is going to have too many turnovers, crossing my fingers on that one. But if they can play a clean game offensively and get after the quarterback, I don't see how Clemson's going to be able to contend in this one. Give me South Carolina to win this one 31-23, and the Gamecocks get a massive win on the road and keep their possible playoff hopes alive. All right, moving on here to our final game of the headlining section. We have a lot to discuss in the around the country, some of the other big games like Iron Bowl, Sunshine State. Miami, Syracuse. We're going to talk about Notre Dame, USC. We're going to give our quick thoughts on Michigan, Ohio State. Ohio State is a 21-point favorite, 42.5 is the over-under. It is the game. The Buckeyes have led the series all time, 19-14-1, but Michigan has won the last three. So now, you know, this is the first year Sharon Moore has been the head coach for the Wolverines. They have struggled on offense all season long. You have an Ohio State team that comes in with the one loss. They look like a possible national title contender, possible team that can win it all. And they have been sitting on this game for 3 years now. They have lost. They've had their hearts ripped out. They've had possible playoff teams, you know, erased because of this loss right here to Michigan. And once it's been at home, they got blown out in the shoe. Now it's back in the shoe, and the Buckeyes are a 3-touchdown favorite. So how can Michigan win this game / compete in it? Well, slowing the game down, eating clock is going to be huge, creating turnovers, and I think this defensive line is going to have to take over. They've got to be able to elevate and play the best game they've had all season long. Ohio State has had some injury issues up front last couple weeks. So this Michigan defense is going to have to be able to create pressure and get to the quarterback, creating negative plays, slowing the game down, and, you know, doing whatever it takes to take some pressure off of that secondary that's had its issues all season long. It's going to have to start up front. Michigan is 21st in the nation in sacks. They are getting about almost 3 a game. So, it's a Ohio State offensive line that has been susceptible at times against decent units. They've played, you know, we're going to see here. They've got to be able to also stop the run, I think, as a unit. I mean, they're fourth in the nation stopping the run. So they've been very good at stopping the run, obviously. They're giving up under 100 yards a game. And Ohio State has been very inconsistent running the football, which has been one of the weirdest things because of how, you know, well, you thought like this 1-2 punch with Quinshon Judkins and Trevion Henderson, how successful they'd be. It just has not panned out to be like that for majority of the season. So, you know, if, you know, are you going to force Will Howard to beat you with his arm, stopping the quarterback run and then stopping the quarter or the 1-2 punch at running back? You've got to be able to do if you're Michigan, and then doing so. Field position is going to have to be a huge game. Creating those negative plays, forcing Ohio State into, you know, must-pass situations, maybe just creating, you know, three and outs, getting the ball back in better field position to steal some points, I think is going to be huge in this one. And if you're Ohio State, make Michigan beat you with their arm, with the pass. Michigan is 127th in passing offense. They don't have any offense. And not to mention, Poston Loveland is questionable in this one. He is trending towards not playing. So that's something to keep an eye on because he is their number one guy. He's realistically like their only like real target they have. So if he's not playing, I don't know where they're going to go to. Ohio State is fourth in pass defense. They're giving up just about 150 yards a game. And if you're Ohio State, I think you got to be able to become the more physical team. What they have been outclassed on the line of scrimmage the last 3 years against Michigan. And some of these guys have been on those teams. JT Tuimoloa, Jack Sawyer, Ty Hamilton. Like these three plus more have been part of those teams that have been outclassed at the line of scrimmage. They have been, you know, they've lost the trenches battle. And so in result, they've been getting, they get run all over and then they can't do anything. They're not like, it's just been completely neutralized. They've got to be able to become a difference maker and step up and take over this game. Especially if you're going to make him, if you're going to make Michigan become a pass heavy team in this game, pin your ears back and get after the quarterback. That's what I say. And if this, and especially offensively, Ohio State, it just feels ready. It feels like in this game to explode. Michigan is 72nd in pass defense. They've been not very good at it. And you know, Jeremiah Smith, Emeka Buka, Carnell Tate, like these guys are going to be able to take advantage of some of these mismatches in the secondary, especially if the defensive line can't get home. You're going to let Will Howard have some time to, you know, find his guy. I mean, it's a recipe for disaster if you're Michigan. I think Ohio State blows Michigan out. This game will not be competitive at all. I think it's early and often. Ohio State's going to win this one 42-17, in my opinion. It's been 3 years of frustration, like I said, that will be poured into this game. I don't think Ryan Day will like stop scoring if he has the chance to. Even regardless of what, how much time's left and what the score's at right now, like he's going to put it on Michigan. Plus, it's not like Ohio State's just kind of lollygagging through this game. You know, they haven't even clinched a spot in the Big Ten title game. They have to win this game to keep that part alive. Because if they don't, then I believe Indiana's going to backdoor their way in. So, Indiana or Penn State, I'm going to look. Regardless, though, what am I thinking? Ohio State has to win this game. So, there won't be any sort of, you know, just kind of put it on cruise control, get ready for the playoff, like nothing like that. Like, they've got to win this game. So, Ohio State's going to dominate. And I already put it as one of my best bets on the week. That line right there is the new line. We put it out earlier on the week, 20.5. So that's what we locked it up at. So I would hammer that even still at 21. I don't think that number's big enough, respectfully. I think Ohio State's going to dominate. But will other teams dominate? We'll find out here and around the country as we are hitting the last couple trips here of around the country before we eventually have to land the plane for the off season. Just kidding. We had bowl season to get ready for. So around the country, this edition, we're going to bounce around all the more bigger games of the weekend. We're going to start with the Iron Bowl. Auburn is at Alabama. Which team wins this game? I have no idea. I would lean Alabama, but which Alabama team are we going to get? Because if we get a team that plays like Oklahoma did, or against Oklahoma, against Vanderbilt, against Tennessee, like, I mean, Auburn can win this game. If Auburn doesn't have the doomsday turnovers, and if Peyton Thorne and Jarquez Hunter can run the football, they will have a legit shot at winning this game. Alabama has been terrible at stopping the run, stopping quarterbacks from running all over them. You let Peyton Thorne run around all over you, Jarquez Hunter, and, you know, you force Jalen Milroe, you stop Jalen Milroe from running the football all over you. I mean, Auburn's got a shot here. I mean, this is a top 25 unit defensively that has played sound football. Again, it's been the one score losses have been an absolute killer for this team. And again, it's mainly been because of the late game turnovers. So if you can get that out and, you know, make this a four quarter fight, they had their hearts ripped out last year. They should have won that game. They were one play away from doing it. Maybe a lot of those guys that are still there remember that and say, we can't let that happen again. We had that team dead, digging their grave, about to bury them, and then they went full on Undertaker. We can't let that slide again. So I like Alabama to win that, but again, I would not touch that game for the likes of me. Tennessee's at Vanderbilt. Sneaky game here. Vanderbilt 37th in rush defense. Tennessee's 9th in rush offense. That's really what it's going to come down to. Line of scrimmage, and can Vanderbilt's defense stop the run? And then Vanderbilt, can they run the football enough, or can Diagopavia kind of make some magic enough against that pass, not only that pass rush, but that defense as a whole for Tennessee. And then just a side note, Dylan Sampson, not a Doak Walker finalist. Very shocking. Believe it. I don't know how he wasn't. Really, outside of Ashton Jeanty, it feels like he's been one of the best running back in the nation. I mean, he's the best running back in the SEC. So for him not to get, as a finalist, little head scratching there. Louisville is at Kentucky. It is the Governor's Cup. Give me Louisville to win this one. Brock Vandergriff did get benched for this one. So give me the Cardinals, especially to get a bounce back win from last year's debacle loss to this Kentucky team at home. I think the Cardinals get a revenge type game. Number 23, Illinois is at Northwestern. Give me Illinois to win that one. Kansas is at Baylor. Kansas needs this win to become bowl eligible. They are playing them, and probably Florida are two of the bigger, more probably two of the best 5-6 loss teams in the nation. And listen, Baylor is mathematically still alive for the Big 12. And what has Kansas done the last month? They've gone through a murderer's path of just eliminating teams, it feels like, from Big 12 or / playoff contention. Is Baylor next? We'll see. I like Kansas to win that one. I think they have obviously more to play for. And just the way they've been rolling the last couple weeks, give me the Jayhawks. Minnesota's at Wisconsin. It's the Paul Bunyan. It's for Paul Bunyan's axe. It is the oldest rivalry in college football, if I remember correctly. Wisconsin, like Kansas, needs this win for bowl eligibility. They get the game at home. Let's see if they can take care of the Golden Gophers, who let last week's game slide between their fingers, kind of like some of these other teams have shown this year. Where's Minnesota at mentally? Memphis is at number 17, Tulane. We talked about Tulane earlier on in the episode. Tulane plays tonight as we're recording this, which is Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Tulane needs to win this game to stay in that playoff hunt. Because they cannot afford to lose this game. UTSA is at Army. Army looking to bounce back after Notre Dame beat the crap out of them. Very unpatriotic, very treasonous of Notre Dame. I think the Army gets back on track here. I love Army this week. Senior day at home against the Roadrunners. They're going to get a big win as they gear up for the conference championship game. And then we have number 5, Notre Dame is at USC. We talked about this earlier. I'm a little concerned with Notre Dame going into this one. It's just the third time all season Notre Dame has gone on the road in a true road game. Somehow they've been able to go in these neutral site games. Well, this is on the road, and this is after last week playing all the way in New York City at Yankee Stadium. Now you got to go cross country to LA. Could be something to look at. And listen, USC has played better defense this year. USC, like Auburn, has had a lot of one-score losses, one-possession losses almost. All 5 of their games this year they've lost have been by one score. And they're the only team to lead. This is according to Josh Pate. Only team to lead in every fourth quarter at some point all season and have 5 losses. They're one of 6 teams to lead in all. Let me restart. They're one of 6 teams to have a lead at some point in every single game in the fourth quarter this season. Outside of the other 5 teams, so USC has 5 losses. The other 5 teams combined have 5 losses. So USC is just not finishing games, but they're playing a lot better. Defensively, they've been a very big upgrade all season long. It's just, can they make enough plays offensively against a pretty stout defense secondary-wise for Notre Dame? It's going to be a very interesting game. I think this is a lower-scoring game, but could be one that could spell disaster if USC can find enough plays and shock and upset Notre Dame and probably knock them out of the playoff. But Notre Dame, again, has to win this to keep their playoff hopes alive, so we'll see where they're at. I would lean USC to cover maybe Notre Dame to win, but we'll see. Number six, Miami is at Syracuse. This is going to be a very high scoring game. I feel like Miami and Syracuse are both top three in passes offense. Miami has been terrible against the pass in ACC play. I mean, they've been letting teams that can't do anything offensively have success against them. And now you're going up against a Syracuse team that can light you up on that side of the football, playing at their home field at the Carrier Dome or whatever it's called now. The only issue for Syracuse is, though, that they have been very susceptible to throwing interceptions. 106 in passes had intercepted. That they've had 12 in the year. Miami is 15th in the nation in passes picked off, at forcing interceptions, 14 on the year. So if Syracuse can play a clean game and not have a game like against where they had Pitt, where they threw three first half pick sixes, this is a very, very high alert upset game. Like, I have this as like a 10 right now. Like, alarms are flashing. Like, this is like DEFCON 5 if you're Miami. To have this game at the end of the year, and that not having it at home either, you have to go to Syracuse. I mean, this is recipe for disaster. And they have to win this game, I think, to keep their playoff hopes alive. Because they really don't. I mean, their best win is probably Miami. Or not Miami. They are Miami. Probably Florida. I mean, just based off how they're playing now down the stretch. I mean, outside of that. And they've been bailed out numerous times this year by their officiating and just tough luck of having to come back after digging themselves multiple possession leads or holes. I mean, this is a very, very, like, nerve-wracking game, I feel like, if you're a Miami fan. And if you're Syracuse, listen, you got nothing to lose. Go out there and just go out there, have fun, and see what happens. You know, what's the worst that happened? You know, you take another loss, you're still going to a bowl game. You're not in the playoff contention. You're not in the ACC title contention. Go out there, just throw it all at Miami. Leave it all on the table. All the chips, push them in the table to get this win on Saturday. Cal is at SMU, number nine SMU, who has already locked up spot in the ACC title game. Give me the Mustangs to finish the ACC regular season out strong. Number 16, Arizona is at Arizona. It is the Territorial Cup. Arizona State must win this game to clinch a spot in the Big 12 title game and to keep up with getting that first round bye if it comes down to that. Arkansas is at number 20 on Missouri. Usually those games are always fun to watch. Give me Missouri with it being at home, though. NC State's at North Carolina. Mac Brown got fired this week. He will finish the season, but he will be out after the season's over. So a lot of people have been circling around John Summerall, who's the coach of Tulane. Could be one. I wouldn't be opposed to that. But I've also heard stuff like Dan Mullen. Trying to think, Jamie Chadwell, assistant guys like Andy Koltnicki, Glenn Schumann. So there's a lot to unpack still with it. But John Summerall is probably the name that's most intriguing with this job. Even Arthur Smith, who's Steelers offensive coordinator because he went there. So a lot to kind of digest. I think if you're North Carolina, though, you think you want to take your time and make sure you're getting the best candidate possible, because this is one of those teams that is like a sleeping giant in a sense where, these programs that were left for dead and just have never been able to kind of get back to where they maybe once were. This is one of them. So you're in a recruiting hotbed. You're in a great location, a great college, academics, other sports, like everything's good. It's just football team now has to take that next step, but it all starts with who you hire at the head coach spot. Florida is at Florida State, the Sunshine State Showdown. Florida coming in after back-to-back ranked wins against teams that were playoff hopefuls. Now Florida has to finish the year out against an FSU team that's been a season from hell for the Noles, and I'm sure they're glad that the season will be over after this game, but man, would they love nothing more than to just pull something out of their ass and win this game and beat their most bitter rival. Do I think it happens? I have no idea. Because Florida is 67th in pass offense, but they're sixth in passing yard per completion. I mean, the explosive plays have been there, especially now with DJ Lagway. Again, the completion percentage is not there for Lagway, but the explosive plays, the highlight reel plays have been there. And that's been a big story of why Florida's had success here down the stretch. FSU's a top 50 unit pass defense-wise, but they can't do anything offensively. They're 115th in pass offense, not to mention they're terrible at keeping the quarterback upright, 129th sacks allowed. And Caleb Banks has been an animal as of late. Tyreek Sapp, Cam Jackson, George Gums, Shamar James, Jack Pyburn. Like, these guys have been on a very hot, a good streak at getting after the quarterback. They had 7 against LSU. They had, I think, 4 against Ole Miss. Like, they've been very good at getting after the quarterback, and I really don't see how they won't not get to the quarterback here. I mean, if you're Florida State, you've got to make this a just gross, sloppy game. Field position's got to be huge in this one. It's kind of like Michigan, it feels like, but even worse, just because there's no momentum at all. At least you get the game at home, at least. So if they win this game, though, you would talk about a momentum killer and just halt any sort of vibes, momentum that was just built by Florida going into the bowl game, going into the offseason. You know, you halt all of it if you lose this game, no matter what the scores. When a close loss, a blowout loss, something, anything like it. Anything less than a win, I don't care if it's by one, it would be an utter failure, an utter disaster if you're Florida. The difference in going 7-5 to finish out the year regular season, not to mention possibly winning a bowl game to go 8-5, that or going 6-6 at the end of the year, that the way Florida's been going the last few weeks would be so big. Just complete total polar opposites of mindsets that you would have as your Florida fan as far as the outlook goes, because it's like you build all this great momentum, you've been dominating it so far, it looks like, in the recruiting last couple days, and you just blow it up in the just right in your face if you lose this game. And talk about a headlining type game if Florida State won this game. I think if Florida State can keep it close in the fourth quarter, I think that's a moral win for them. Honestly, I think the spread right now is 13.5 or 14. Yeah, I think it opened at 15, so it's dropped some, but man, it feels like a lot still. Or it doesn't feel like a lot. I think Florida's going to be able to dominate this one. I like the under in this game. It's at 45.5. I look at it like two ways. Kind of like with the Ole Miss Mississippi State. It's either A, going to be a blowout, and Florida's going to win 31-10. Or B, it becomes a slugfest and it's like a 17-14 game. That's how I view this game. So give me Florida to win this one, and hopefully they don't hopefully be ashamed if they lost this one. Oklahoma's at LSU. LSU has struggled all year against stopping mobile quarterbacks, and Jackson Arnold ran all over Alabama's defense. I would see why he wouldn't have an issue against LSU, but I do think LSU is going to win this one. Number 24, Kansas State's at number 18, Iowa State. It is Farmageddon. Remember last year's famous blizzard Farmageddon. But both teams are still in contention for Big 12 title appearance. But again, it's a must win then comes for both teams. Iowa State has the most likely path that they win. I believe they're in. So most likely scenario for the Big 12 title game, I believe, is Iowa State and Arizona State. If everything just kind of holds serve and nothing happens. Nevada, finally, is at number 22, UNLV. UNLV needs to win this game to clinch, I believe, a spot in the Mountain West title game. I do not believe they have clinched a spot yet, and it helps Boise State's resume. So, help a friend while almost trying to beat them. If you get there, you get a rematch. UNLV almost won that game. That was in Vegas a couple weeks ago. They let that game slip away. They could look in to get a revenge spot there. And finally here, as we wrap up today's episode, we have a laundry list of best bets on Rivalry Week. Why not last weekend of the regular season? We're going to throw it all out here. All out here. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 11 plays. Notice that we're 35-26-1 on the year. Well, we're 9 games over 500. We have 11 plays, which means we need to have a good week. But if we can secure a 500 victory on this week, we're going to finish the regular season out over 500, which is massive. I mean, obviously, we're making money. So, you know, we've been up and down the last couple weeks. We were 3-4 last week. We're going to have a good week this week. This week's plays. We already locked in Ohio State minus 20.5. USC plus 7.5. Utah plus 9.5. They're at UCF tomorrow on Friday. Both teams are not good. So, I don't see how either team's going to blow each other out. Kansas is minus 1. Ole Miss, Mississippi State, under 61.5. Texas A&M, minus 5.5. Plus 5.5. Sorry about that. Let me adjust that real quick. All right, perfect. Texas A&M, plus 5.5. South Carolina, plus 2.5. Army, minus 7.5. Florida State, under 45.5. West Virginia, plus 3.5. I believe they're at Texas Tech this week. And then Boston College, minus 5 against Pitt this weekend. So, those are the plays this weekend. We're going to dominate. I can already feel it. We're going to have good vibes rolling into the week. And we're going to have a great Saturday. Great Thanksgiving week. Because we've got Tulane. We've got Tulane Memphis this week. Or on Thursday. And then what a Friday slate we got. We have Nebraska, Iowa. We got Utah, Colorado, Oklahoma State, Utah, UCF, Georgia, Georgia Tech. We got the Egg Bowl, Mississippi State, Ole Miss. We have a big, big list of games, not to mention just that's almost the appetizer. That's like the, you know, your mac and cheese, the mashed potatoes, and, you know, the green bean casserole, the dressing or stuffing, however you want to say it. And then you get to the main, the turkey, the ham, you know, everything else on Saturday. So, I mean, it makes it all a great weekend. This is the best weekend right here. It's one of my favorite weekends of each and every year because rivalry games, you never know what happens. You never know. You better bring your A game because there's nothing more your rival wants to do than either spoil your season, finish their year outright, because they don't like you, you don't like them. That's what makes it so much fun. There's just no sort of, you know, no sort of, you know, kind will against or with each other. It's all ill, negative stuff. I want to beat you. You want to beat me. Let's go at it. That's what we love about the sport, and can't wait for it. So, without further ado, though, we are going to be calling it a day here on the College Football Talk with Hunter DeLauder podcast. Make sure you guys are subscribing to the podcast at DeLauder or on YouTube. Let me restart that. Make sure you guys are subscribing to the podcast on YouTube and then listening and following on Spotify/Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts except Apple Pod. So make sure you guys are doing that. If you want to hit me up on the socials at DeLauder Hunter on Twitter, I'm usually tweeting wild on Saturday during college football weekends, and then Instagram Hunter.TheLauder83 as well. So make sure you guys are doing all that. I will be watching the games, doing everything, and then I will catch you guys on the flip side for Week 14 recap as we get ready for conference championship weekend. So enjoy your Thanksgiving, guys, and let's have a great Saturday, Friday, Saturday too. So all that being said, have a good